This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's good to be here and good to see some familiar faces. I was worried I'd be all these strange people, but I have a few donors in the room and a few, none of my board members came here, so I don't know what that says or doesn't say. It's just great to have each of you here. Kelly runs one of our weeks of summer camp. Didn't even notice you in the front. But it's wonderful to have each of you here. Just to introduce myself real briefly so you know why I have a funny accent and some things like that, is I grew up in Canada, way up in the mission field, and Marvin Wyrick, it's good to see you here. He serves on the board of the mission that my dad was under and served under for about 50 years. And then when I was 21, I went to the Green South and found a wife and went to New York City for 2 years and camp managers for the last 22. So that gives you a little picture. But I just got back from El Salvador. The last 2 months I was down there for a sabbatical. After 10 years ago, we went to Haiti and we had a wonderful, wonderful time. AMA Mission in El Salvador is doing tremendous work. Very, very kind to us. They let us relax. They let us refresh. And we came back way more full than we were when we went, that's for sure. So I'm just feeling very, very blessed right now. And also trying to dig out from under my pile of 2 months. 4 days ago I got back, so that's still a process. Actually, a week ago today. So it's really good to be here, and I love this topic. I don't know if they realized how much I enjoy this topic, enjoy this discussion. It's something I'm very passionate about. Of course, I care about ministry and reaching souls, but of all my hats I wear, this is one hat I just love to wear. And but we're not going to go all around the room and take 20 minutes, but just really briefly, if there's a reason you came here that has to do with the subject material, like say you have a burning question about something you're facing or you're up against, you're just not sure about, I want this to be relevant. Because isn't it a tragedy when we spend all our time answering questions nobody has? So if I answer a bunch of questions, it might be great, but if it's not your questions, who cares? So does anybody have any questions that you're kind of hoping you'd find some answers here today? Shout it out. Just shout it out. It doesn't matter. There's no right and wrong one. Okay, let's dive in. And I'll never get done, but we'll quit, and hopefully you have some time at the end here. And this clicker is supposed to work, but doesn't always. So bear with me here. So relating to, so this is what was in the program. Don't you just love when you go to a workshop and they don't even talk about what they said they're going to talk about? It's like, don't put it in there if you're not going to talk about it. So I tried to stick with it, and I put my own paragraph in there that is supposed to be in the program. I think it is anyway. But your relationship with your constituency is your lifeline in many ways. Funding, accountability, direction, protection. It can also be antagonistic. Let's face it, right? Learn how you can strengthen those ties and maximize it to be mutually beneficial for a stronger ministry. So that's our purpose of gathering. If you're in the right place, I mean, if you're in the wrong place, then you can leave anytime. But that's what we're going to be talking about the next little while, if this works. There it works. Language constituency is not an ATM. Oh, I need money. Beep, 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 beep. Guess what? If you start relating when you need money, it's a little late. You don't wait till you need an ATM machine to relate to constituency. It doesn't go across too good. I've been there. And it's not a necessary evil. How many of you sometimes, oh, Marlon, you have so many other things to do, right? So, oh, I've got to do this. Why do I have to spend all this, waste all this time on this? And it's not a means to an end. Or is it? Do you see relating to constituency as a means to an end? Or as the end? So, it is ministry. Relating to constituency is ministry. It's investing in lives or supporting constituency and volunteers is a huge part of ministry itself. They are souls too. And this, Warren Miller told me this, and I never forgot it, that ministry is not just reaching the children that you're reaching, but it's related to constituency. It's actually part of the ministry. It's not a means to an end. It is ministry. It's not just a pain in the neck, I have to go do this, but it's part of ministry, part of what I'm doing. We're going to talk more about this. But as I it's part of my ministry because it helps me multiply my effectiveness. How many of you ever thought there's no way you're going to get everything done, so you'll just try harder? So you just stay later. One of the vows I made on my sabbatical is never after 6 o'clock. That lasts about 2 days. But anyway, but I'm not going to forget it. I'm going to go back to it because my wife and I talked about this. You don't sleep well when you're working right up to the time you go to bed. At least I don't. So boundaries. But when you multiply your effectiveness, guess what? It's not up to you to do it all. How can you empower people, and in our case, you know, empower volunteers to maybe design the newsletter so I don't need to. That's just an off-the-cuff example. But multiplying my effectiveness is the key, not trying hard. It's like you heard the story of two horses that pull well together. I love the analogy of that. Two horses pulling perfectly together, well together, pull four times as much as one horse. Don't try to get me to explain, because I have no idea why. But two horses pulling together pull four times as what one horse. Wouldn't it be great if you could do four times what you're doing now? Maybe part of the answer is team, delegate, empower, and seeing it as a way to multiply your effectiveness, not as a dream. It also broadens our world, gives them an opportunity to do ministry. When you get involved, when you get people involved in the hands-on of ministry, they feel a part of it. It benefits them to be a part of the ministry God has called you to be. It broadens their world. We had a dear Amish boy come to Camp Andrews one summer, 18 years old, fresh off the farm, green as the grass, big eyes, but a heart for the Lord and a heart for inner city children. Sometimes it's easier working with green people than people that think they know everything. And so we took him on board, one of the best decisions I ever made. He soaked it in, he was teachable, he just poured his heart into it. It broadened his world from the Amish farm to inner city children. It broadened his world. I did him a huge favor by inviting him to come on as a volunteer. Broadened his world. It stretches their faith to see God at work. They come to Camp Andrews and say, I don't know how to do this. There's inner city children. What if they run a coup and run me out? You know, lynching, strangling me. I don't know what they're going to do to me. I'm scared to death. I don't want to try this. Christy Rose, of course. Oh, that's a good idea, Jeff. I don't want to get recorded. But...
Okay, I like that side better, too. Sorry for those on the tape that don't know what this is going on. It's just, where was I? Yeah. So they're scared and they're, I don't know how to do ministry, but you give young people an opportunity to come to camp. They go out there. And then what do you know? A young boy accepts Christ and changes. And Monday they were this way and Tuesday they're this way. And I did it, kind of. God saved him, but I was part of it. And it stretches their face like, oh, maybe there is something. Maybe I can do ministry. It stretches their faith beyond just their own finite, all I can do. So that's to do with volunteers and helping those people get involved in your ministry. Genuinely caring. Now let's talk about genuinely caring. Emphasis here on genuinely. Do you genuinely care about your constituency? Now we're talking supporters and volunteers and prayer warriors. Not manipulating to do your thing and your goals. Not just to do what you want them to do and to fulfill so you don't have to anymore. Valuable partners in ministry and treating them as valuable partners. Guess what? They can tell whether you think they're valuable or just a way to get a job done. Yeah, they're doing a job. We know that. That's why you ask them to volunteer. That's why you ask them to be part of it. But they can tell whether you see them as valuable people or just a machine to get a job done. Like in the last workshop, sometimes some volunteer says, I feel like all I'm doing is any good monkey could be trained to do it. And they just feel like they're just a machine. Valuable partners in ministry. And if my heart values them, they can feel it. I can say all the right things. Oh, I'm so glad you're a volunteer. I'm so glad. You're here, but they can feel whether you really value them or not. And do you really value them? Next thing is The next thing after that, seek to understand what moves their heart. Do you understand what really moves their constituency's heart? Like, why do they support you? And what, like the one young man I was talking to is a businessman here in the county, and I was presenting the ministry, and I start. So I said, so what do you care about? What gets you out of bed in the morning? Well, I care about helping young people get through the struggle of drug addiction because I was there. And I remember what it was like when I was in the 20s and nobody was there for me going through what I was going through. And I says, I think that fits because the young people that we're working with and working with, they face drug addiction. And that was one of the reasons he cared about listening about the ministry. But I also know a young man who is a businessman in the area here. We got to talk, and he was so friendly and so nice. He is my son's boss and just a great, godly man, but he never sends anything. And so I enjoy talking to him. I said, so one time I said, so what type of missions, what type of God's work do you just get really thrilled about? And he says, oh, I get thrilled about those people that go to Ghana, Africa, and go to Ireland, and go to South America, and just those foreign missions just really stir my heart. I said, that's great, tell me about that. So we got to talking about that. And you know what I figured out after that? I'm gonna always be his friend, but our ministry is not there. We don't do that. Heralds of Hope does that. Other ministries do that, but we don't. It's okay. He's a great man, he's a godly man. But I soon found out that it's not where his passion's at, and that's okay. I don't bait on his door. I might stop by once a year or something, but I haven't pursued him much since then because I understood. There's a young man, old man actually, electrician, that volunteers at camp, and so I got to talk with him. So what brings you to camp? What excites you about coming here? He says, oh, when I was a boy, my dad left our family, and somebody sent me to camp as a boy, and I didn't have a dad, but I went there, and I found a counselor that was there. He was like a dad to me, and I just love seeing these boys come here to camp. Because I know a lot of them don't have dads. And I just love volunteering. Wow, it's perfect. So there's a connection there. But taking the time to understand what really moves their heart. Not manipulate your story to necessarily fit them, but understand what really moves their heart. And I know we joked about the pearls before swine, but I purposely pursue people that really do have an interest in this kind of ministry, or I know they've supported other ministries like ours. And I often make it just one call if I find out they have more of an interest in a different mission, like foreign missions. It's okay if not everybody jumps up and down about the ministry you're called to. The next thing is we build into their lives and discover and develop their gifts, even beyond what helps your ministry. This is really hard. I'm a very practical kind of a guy. Get things done. The more you get done, the better. And it's really hard for me to think of, I'm going to put all this time into the person and they're only going to be here 3 months and they're gone. And is it really worth all the time I put into them? Have you ever asked that question? So that's part of your constituency, right? It's part of people that are making ministry happen. But then there's Nelson and Jess who were at Camp Andrews for 2 years. And now, then they went up to Bethesda Farms and ran a home for girls, teen girls, totally unrelated to Camp Andrews. But I know for a fact they took a lot of what they learned through their time at Camp Andrews, and it's been very, very helpful in their new ministry. It's not just about me and my empire. Yeah, you only have a limited amount of time and resources, but seeing the bigger picture that you're pouring your life into these lives that will multiply and multiply beyond just your ministry and building your kingdom. Constituency is not just a necessary evil, right? It's building into people's lives, real souls, that who knows how many hundreds of others they'll reach, who knows how many other, much impact they'll have in the kingdom besides you and your ministry. So now, more about genuinely caring on the next slide is doing them a favor by giving them an opportunity to invest in eternal significance. It's not just about you going around begging for what you need, begging for the help you need, begging your constituency to send a check, begging a donor to give. It's seeing it as giving them an opportunity to be blessed. Now, to some people, that's just a play on words. Yeah, right, you're actually just going there looking for money. But when you start having the shift that you see it as, no, I'm doing them a big favor by getting them involved in eternal kingdom work, it broadens the picture. Then it's part of the piece of seeing it as a ministry that givers, riches are empty. Yes, that's, but you know, yeah, it's great to give some fulfillment to build a business. But at the end of the day, riches are pretty empty and as far as giving purpose or meaning. But when they can see their resources impacting ministry, changing lives, things that they really care about, it does them such a huge favor to know, well, my life is really significant after all. I know a man that I go share at least once or twice a year. He turns his thermostat down to 64 degrees in his house. When I go to his house, it's chilly. It's kind of cold, half cold. And he cares about the ministry. And he writes out a check after we're done to support the ministry. But to think about that man when I say, should we buy this or shouldn't we? Should we hire this person or shouldn't we? Should we go to full color or shouldn't we? I think about the man that turns his thermostat down to 64 so he can write out the check to me. It gives me a sense of accountability to him, realizing, yeah, he's a giving, but he's counting on his gift making an eternal difference. And that's my integrity to make it worthwhile, make it worth him being cold and uncomfortable so that he can sacrifice for ministry. Then the next one is the volunteers. Volunteers want to feel worthwhile. They want to feel like partners, like they're part of the ministry. They want to be part of the team. They want to discover their gifts and their passion and looking to you to plug them into the best seat on the bus and also to confront them because children come first. All the above, right? But genuinely caring for the volunteers is like, oh, good, we got six people to help us. Or, oh, good, we got six people that are going to find fulfillment and purpose in pouring their lives in other people's lives. It's a matter of perspective, kind of, right? So that's what I'm trying to get at. It's not just a means to an end. It is the end. It is part of the end. But yet the children come first. So this poor volunteer that wants to come, but he messes stuff up and he, you know, maybe he's in the wrong seat in the bus. Maybe he could have a different role. Maybe he can make brownies in the kitchen. I don't know. Maybe there is a part for him. But don't sacrifice the children for the volunteers either. Yes, you do care about their gifts and you care about their passion and them finding their place in God's kingdom. All right, next thing. On down. Prayer warriors are a key. Are they just, yeah, it's just nice to be able to tell people, we have 200 prayer warriors. Isn't that great? How many prayer warriors do you have? How often have you told them, without you, we would just be running a daycare center? Without you covering this ministry in prayer, people's lives would not be changed. Because if the Spirit of God doesn't show up, if Jesus doesn't come, people are not going to be transformed by the Spirit of God. You are prayer warriors. It's not just the nicest thing to say when you talk about what your needs are, but genuinely, genuinely, if you don't genuinely feel it, don't say it. But I go to Landis Homes. It's a retirement village just a couple miles down the road here. I go there, and these dear old ladies can't get out of the apartment, some of them, especially in February. So I like to go in February. I was in El Salvador this February. But anyway, go there and just say, thank you so much for praying. They usually have a couple cards of campers that they're praying for. And what about this person? What about this person? And I tell them stories of what God's doing, and it just blesses their heart. Here I am in a rocking chair and I can't do a blooming thing, which I'd love to come down there and cook. I'd love to come down there and do something. All I can do is pray. I said, don't say all you can do is pray. That's a key role. And don't say if you don't believe it. But see, portray that you genuinely care about them and showing them that they do have a key role to play. It is an important role. And next we have the board members or oversight committee or what do you have, whatever you have in ministry. Have you affirmed why their time investment is worth it? My board members love to hear stories. They love to hear, so what happened last weekend at Camp Andrews? Who came? What did God do? What happened? They love to hear what's going on there. Not just, we are full. This is nice to hear, but what happened? What did Sixth Street do this year? Sixth Street Mission comes from Philadelphia. They're sitting right up front here and picking on them. What did God do in Sixth Street Mission this year? tell us stories about what God is doing, that they feel like they're not just coming to board meetings that go way too late, take them away from their families, are another thing to fill up their schedule, but it's crucial, it's worth it. What they're doing is valuable. I love having them come down and eat with the campers. I don't, even if it's hot dogs and spaghetti or whatever it is, I love to have them come down and hear the noise and see them throw food at each other and experience camp. Because then they get a better picture and they understand, oh, that's why you need this in the dining hall. That's why they get to understand, they get to see front lines what God is doing. And the next thing then is not just care about them, but care about their own personal needs and that they're people just like me. Again, it has to be genuine or it's just gonna feel yucky. It's just gonna feel like manipulation. If any of this, you just take this home and say, oh, Phil said these cute good things you should do. If it's not genuine, don't do it. But genuinely caring about their own personal needs. One man I sat with to share about the ministry, and we had an hour together, our appointment. And he started talking about his son. And I could tell his real burden in his heart, because his son didn't know the Lord, was starting to smoke and get in with some of the wrong crowd. And he was talking about how he went hunting with his son, and they were going to hunt deer, and how it all went. And we started talking and talking, or he started talking and talking, talking. And I just kept listening and asked questions, and I really wanted to hear about his son. 55 minutes went past. All of a sudden, he looks at it, true story. All of a sudden, he looks at his watch. Oh, we got 5 minutes. So what's happening at Camp Andrews? And I said, why don't we just forget about that? Let's just have a word of prayer for your son. Because right now, he needs the Lord, doesn't he? So we sat there and we prayed. Next week, he sent a $10,000 check. And I never asked him for a dollar. I didn't say a single thing about Camp Andrews. Now, was that a ploy? Let me see. If I pray for him, maybe he'll send $10. Because don't tell me you don't think those things, because I am tempted to think those things. But I was there. I was entering the story. Oh, what it would be like if my son was in that shoes? What would it be like if my son was going through that stuff? Wow, that's hard stuff. Caring, genuinely. How can I pray for you? What are you facing that seems really big right now? Well, we just got bought out by another company, and they're coming in from Kansas, and they don't know the first thing about how we do things here, and it's really, really tough. So that was one time he shared. Genuinely caring and praying for them. They know you need money. You don't have to tell them. Another young man, and I keep saying young, but this is another old man. Landis Holmes there, his wife just died 3 months ago. And I think I was somewhere, I know I was out of town, I couldn't go to the viewing, but I definitely read up. He's been a very faithful supporter. I don't know his wife real well, but I know him. So I went to visit him, and of all the people I could have visited there, I wanted to go there first, because it's just been 3 months since his wife died, and they had been married probably 60 years, right? So we go there, and the whole time, he just wanted to talk about his wife. He pulled out the bulletin from the funeral. He said, isn't she beautiful? He showed a picture of her. And then read the poem about her that one of the grandchildren read. It was just beautiful. It was just priceless. He just wanted to talk about his wife and have someone that cares. And so he shared a lot of tears, and we just started together. I ended up praying for him. He didn't send a big check next week, but that's okay. Because it's ministry. That was ministry. Right? It wasn't what Camp Andrews does every day, but it's ministry. It was powerful and beautiful. What a privilege. But the bottom line is, next slide. Again. Thank and more thanks, and care some more. And when you do care, and when you do genuinely care, and when you do genuinely thank, and you express how crucial they are to the ministry that God has called you to. Who doesn't want to hear that? And who isn't blessed by hearing how they can be part of something eternally significant? In the meantime, minister and be there for them in whatever they're facing. Now, I'll just talk a little bit about presenting your ministry. Hopefully this is helpful for some of you. But in presenting your ministry, first of all, understanding, and some of this is familiar, some of it may be new. It's God's work. We just deliver the message. It's not my ministry. I'm going to convince them that my ministry is better than New Horizons, or I'm going to convince them that my ministry is better than Heralds of Hope. No, it's God's work. We just deliver the message. We don't twist arms. We don't beg. All the professionals tell you to have numbers and beg. And if you want to do that, it's up to you. It's not my personal philosophy or belief. I just deliver the message. I just say, this is what God's doing. You want to hear what God's doing? Sure. Okay, let's talk about what God's doing. The next one is to be authentic and transparent and not to embellish. Embellish is a hard one for me. Like I like to be kind of dramatic, as you maybe could tell already. And I like to get excited about things. But be careful. Don't overdo it. Embellishing smells bad because it's like you're trying to oversell, to use a blunt term. You're trying to butter up. Everybody knows no ministry is just hunky-dory. Now, I don't hang out the dirty wash for donors to see, but I don't mind saying, you know, we're going through some real tough growing pains right now. Would you mind praying for us? Like, or, you know, we'd love to have more children come. Could you just... We started this Meadows of Hope ministry last summer. It's a great ministry. The house is empty, though. Only has two girls in it. Could you just pray that more girls would come? We're not sure what's holding them back. Not, oh, we got a full house, and it's just doing gangbusters, and every day someone accepts Christ. And well, if that's true, it's okay, but don't embellish it. Be honest and transparent. That goes along with being authentic and transparent. Being authentic and being for real. People can soon smell whether you're trying to just look good and butter it up. Just be authentic and honest. And the next is live in faith, and we are trusting and provide. You know, sometimes we have this couple hundred thousand dollar project. You know, like people have given over $3.5 million in the last 10 years to Camp Andrews for different projects coming up. And it seems so big. Like, how in the world is this ever going to happen? It's going to be impossible. I just tell people, if the money's not there, we're not going to start. 80% has to be in the bank before we'll dig the footers. And if the money runs out before we get done, we'll stop building until the money comes in. So it's right up front. It's not like high pressure, like if you don't give today, people are going to hell. It's just, well, that's reality. But you're saying up front, if God lays it on your heart, but when we're not going to start until 80% is in hand, and when the money runs out, if it does before we get done, we're going to stop building and wait till it comes in. So that's what the board's policy was. There it is. So if you want to be part of it, welcome aboard. But living in faith, saying we're going to be trusting God for this coming in. And nextly, be contagiously irresistible. When you're passionate, next thing here, own the vision and passion yourself. I will never, ever, ever ask that man who turns down his thermostat to 64 degrees. I will never, ever even present any financial needs if I'm not 100% convinced this will change lives. This will make an eternal difference. There's no way I'm going to talk to them and try to pump myself up and kind of, they can tell whether you really believe it or not. And do you really believe that, yeah, it's worth turning your thermostat down for this ministry? It's worth it. If you don't believe it, then it's going to be tough to share the vision effectively. Absolutely convinced it's God's will. For example, we were going to build a gym. So it's kind of controversial. Like, what do you need a gym for? You're giving the gospel. Why do you need a gym for inner city children? So the board actually wrestled with it for 3 years about whether we should build a gym or not. Back and forth. Should we build it or not? It's going to make it sound like a sports camp. And all we're going to be about is games. All games and no gospel, right? So what kind of camp are you? Well, back and forth, back and forth. 3 years. But that was good 3 years. Because at the end of 3 years, all 7 board members and myself were absolutely convinced that to take us to the next stage in ministry, this is necessary. And these are the 5 reasons why it's necessary. And they're in the brochure. And when I go to people, I say, you might be wondering why we need a gym. Well, let me explain it to you. These are the 5 reasons. And the board is convinced these 5 are legitimate, and so do I. It's very clear. Now, not everybody wants to give to that. That's okay. But you're convinced it's part of the ministry that God has called you to, and it's necessary. And then share your burning heart and purpose as well. Next page is answer questions of those you're talking to. We said at the beginning here, what a pity that would be if you answer a bunch of questions that nobody's asking. And the same thing can happen when you talk to your constituency. And maybe they don't really care about a gym, so don't talk about the gym. Answer questions they're asking. And maybe your constituency doesn't care about some things, but maybe they would care about children that are don't have a dad. Who doesn't understand that dads are important? These kids don't have a dad. And my husband wants to be there for these boys that don't have a dad. So there you're answering a question they understand. They get the importance of a family. They might not get the whole mission thing, but they get the importance of a dad. And so you're answering questions that they are asking. So you need to know your audience. Why are they asking it? Next one. So you answer the question, why do we exist? So if all of a sudden Camp Andrews would cease to exist, what would be missed? If New Horizons all of a sudden die, what would be missed? So what is it about your ministry that is crucial that it exists? Why do we exist? Answer it, be able to answer that clearly. Why we exist? Next, what is our purpose? Clearly, uniquely defined. What is your ministry God's called you? What is its purpose? Can you explain it clearly without a lot of going around in circles, but clearly? And even better yet, next line, what is a phrase that captures who you are? And there's a lot of buzzwords about mission statements and purpose statements, but a phrase. So the phrase at Camp Andrews is introducing urban youth to Jesus. So we understand that unless youth meet Jesus, we're just a daycare center. Let them be a daycare center, but we're different. We want to introduce people, that everybody who steps on the grounds meets Jesus in a life-changing way. But what's yours? Maybe it's helping teens thrive, or empowering youth to live victoriously, or whatever your phrase, it captures, this is who we are. And you say it, and you say it again. So it's very clear. And it's clear to yourself as well as to your constituency. Oh, Camp Andrews, oh, we know about them. They help urban youth. So it's not a long, complicated, hard to understand purpose, but it's clear. And then they're asking, how am I crucial for children to be reached? One example is, okay, so they can give $48 for a child to come to a week of camp. So it's clear, okay, I give $48, so Johnny comes to camp in Philadelphia with Sixth Street Mission. Great. Johnny sends me a thank you card at the end of the week, tells me his name and how I can pray for him. Great. $48 got Johnny to camp. Simple, right? So they know exactly how they're crucial helping children come to camp. We're building a house, how many square feet and whatever else. But it's clear what their part is in the ministry and their role is. And next, develop relationships. We kind of talked about this when we talked about caring, but developing relationships. Next line, building trust with integrity and sincerity and being real. Now I'm going to get really practical here. I got an illustration here I think that fits really. What does it mean to build trust with integrity, sincerity, and being real? I struggle sometimes because I talk to Amish people. I talk to beachy people. I talk to non-Christians. I talk to people that go to this church, Manor Brethren in Christ Church. I talk to different people from different backgrounds. Do I put on a different shirt? Depends who I talk to. What do you think? Do I wear a plain suit to my Amish friends, but a t-shirt to the people from here? What would you do? How do you build trust with integrity and sincerity? I have found that people aren't so much cared about what's on as they are that it's really you. Then they know who you are, they know who the ministry is, and they can decide whether to give to it or not. What's really destructive is when they think they're giving to a man with a plain coat, and they realize later it's a man with a t-shirt. That's damaging. So how does that work in practical terms? So should I wear a plain suit or not when I visit people? One thing for sure, you shouldn't borrow one. If you don't own one, you shouldn't be wearing one anywhere. Oh, that made kind of sense, right? Don't borrow one just because you think the Amishman might give more. If you don't have one, don't wear it. And it's okay. You might have, there's a variety in this room, and I understand, I respect everyone here. But I want to be authentic. When they see Phil, I want them to see the real Phil and be honest about where I'm at. I don't want to embellish and say that we're this super conservative mission more than we really are, just because I'm trying to appease somebody that's more conservative. Am I going to be sensitive? Of course. Am I going to be tasteful in how I talk? Of course I'm going to be tasteful. But not a chameleon. They need to see exactly who you are, and then they can decide whether that's a ministry they want to support. Don't try to be something to impress somebody to get what you want. Be who you are. Be clear what you are. Ask the board who we are. So we're hiring new staff. So what kind of staff do we hire? Well, if we just go out and hire just anybody, all of a sudden the donors would say, I thought Phil was this person. Why did he hire that staff person? Consistency. Not everybody understands that. Some people understand it and some people don't. So am I a slave to them? No, I am simply consistently committed to be transparent about where we are, where I am, where the ministry is, unapologetically, and proceed from there. But sincerity and being real is crucial. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? So if I go to a church, I do have a plain suit, and I'm proud of it. If I go to a church where plain suits are common or the preachers wear them, I'll definitely wear it. And I'll definitely, because that's what I wear when I usually preach. And so I'll wear it, and I won't be apologizing for it. But don't borrow one. And don't be somebody you're not. Okay? Next. People support people, not ministries. And not mean just because 3 million came in doesn't mean Phil's a great guy. But the reality is the relationship and the trust that's developed with me gives them confidence to give. So it's about building relationships, not just how many dollars come in. And it, going back to the, that's all about the ministry. And then start with those who have an interest, just like Almost Newlywed was saying back here. 1 month, right? Go to the people that you know how, I mean, maybe you make cold calls, maybe you try to build board members from that you don't even know, but often use the network of people you already know have an interest and build from there and go beyond from there. Be specific. Next line there, Jimmy. People don't like to give to a big pot. They want to know exactly what it will do. So, in other words, we want to build the Oakview Lodge at Camp Andrews, okay? So it's going to cost $855,000, I think it was, something like that. So this is why. So remember the five reasons? We had to clearly define. These are the five reasons we need to build this facility. We now serve 4,800 people. With this facility, we'd be able to reach 7,600 people. They're on the waiting list now. We're sure they would come if the facility was there. Please give. We can increase our ministry by 50% if you give to this project. I didn't say it that way, but that was kind of the gist. Okay? So then after it's built, and we go back and say, well, actually, it wasn't 7,600. It was 8,800 that are now coming. And this year we're hoping it's 9,000. So is it all about numbers? No, it's not about numbers. But it's reaffirming that he wasn't just running up his own tree or trying to drum up money, but it actually was happening. So the next time to start Meadows of Hope across the road, that house is very expensive and hard to build. So the board members, the ministry, maybe they're going to mean what they say. Maybe it will actually do what they said it was going to do because it did last time. But it's specific. They know exactly what's going to happen. They know exactly what kind of ministry is going to happen. It's not just giving to a big pod, but it's giving to what really matters. The next thing is sponsorships. I believe so much. If people want to know that Johnny is coming to camp because I gave. They want to know that Meadows of Hope teen girl from New York City wants to come. Actually, right now, New York City girl wants to come to Meadows of Hope. Abused teen girl ministry, but can't because not lack of funds. Guess what? There's people that really care about Sally coming to Meadows of Hope. So I want to know if I give $1,000 a month, she can come. Specific, they know the impact, and they like to know exactly what's going to be happening. On down to be accountable and respectful. Now, nobody has board issues, and I know there's some board members here, but just in case some things come up with board members, because they're part of your constituency too. First of all, do I see board members as gumming up the works, getting in the way. If they would just get out of the way, I could run this ministry like it's supposed to be. Hey, maybe you're really spiritual, but there's times that I felt that. There's also times that when I felt that, 2 months later I go, boy, am I ever glad they put on the brakes. Am I ever glad they asked those hard questions? Am I ever glad they didn't hang me by the rope that I was asking for, right? Am I ever glad? But seeing that committee that sometimes doesn't understand ministry or doesn't see things the way you do, but seeing them as, the next line then, building trust and having everything out in the open, building that relationship where it's, you put it all out there. They make the decision they make. It may not be what you agree with, but it's out there. You're open. You're honest. You're building trust. You're not hiding facts from them, so you get what you want. And the next thing is, you actually realize how crucial their perspective is. That their perspective is critical, and you actually believe that. You can, believe it or not, choose to believe that the board's perspective is critical and not just a hindrance or getting in our way. Or do I see them instead as the next line here of the Pharisees are plugging up the house so the crippled man couldn't get to Jesus? Or men with the rope that are actually going to help you get the man up on the roof to get to Jesus? But assuming the best in them, because sometimes it just doesn't always seem like the best. And lastly, that they're your protection. How many pitfalls, how many train wrecks would there have been if the board wouldn't have asked those hard questions? And I like to get things done and fast. I don't want to spend 3 years talking about a gym. But looking back, that was crucial 3 years. I remember specifically one time I gave an opinion on the board. And I said, this is how I really feel we should go. And this is the reasons I feel we should go. And everybody was quiet. And then one by one, they said a different way. And I thought they were messed up. We're going to miss it. We're going to miss it. 3 months later, it became painstakingly obvious that it's good Phil didn't carry the day. And we went with the board. And then I got convicted about that. Now, I owe it to the board to be honest with them. But I got convicted about it. You know, it would be really good for my pride to say something at the board meeting. So 3 months later, guess what I said? I swallowed hard. I said, you know what? I just want to thank you for being honest with me. Because I'd have made a train wreck of this decision. And I just want to thank you for caring enough about me and about this ministry to be honest with me and having the courage to stand up and give a different perspective. And thank them for that. Did that build relationship? Absolutely. Was it a little bit hard on my pride? Sure, because Phil knows best because I've been there 20 years. It's not quite always that painstakingly obvious, but this time there was just no question. It would have been obvious. But humble enough that I don't always know what's best. I don't always see the whole picture. And they may seem like a gumming up the works and in the way, whatever authority it might be. But understanding that God's placed them for a purpose. And if it turns out bad, guess what? It's not on your back. The board made the call. You did your part. You were honest. You had the courage to share where you're coming from. And then it's not your call. And lastly, thank you, Jim. You're doing a great job. Relating to constituency is not a means to an end. It is the end. It is part of the ministry God has called us to. They are vital partners with you, not roadblocks. On down through Jimmy and be grateful and give him the glory for the privilege of sharing. You don't have to be apologetic. So the time's yours. Any questions? Be who you are. Like, be somebody that any donor can walk in anytime and you're not going to be rushing around to fix something. Be who you are. And if you're embarrassed about who you are, maybe you should change. Right on. Someone else? You said 0 minutes, so I guess that means I better quit. Thank you for coming. I hope it was a little bit of encouragement to you and bless you in your ministry.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.